Welcome to Big Blend Radio with travel writer Linda Kassam, the food, wine, and shopping diva. Hey, everybody, it is time to have fun with wine. That's it. We like this. Diva Linda is a food, wine, and shopping diva. She's a food, wine, and travel writer. And every first Saturday, she's here. And she always brings these amazing guests on our show. And today we have Chris Hiron. He is the head winemaker over at Dansin Vineyards. Not dancing, Dansin. And honestly, I think the name of the wine, the actual vineyards, goes perfectly with the wine, because there's movement in this wine. There's a subtlety. You need to take time with it, but then there's just like, you never know what's going to happen with each sip. Wouldn't you say, Diva Linda? This is good wine. I emailed you in caps. Good wine. I mean, it's beyond good. It's beyond really good. It's good. Exceptional, like you said.
I mean, it's just quite wonderful. The wines that both you and I tasted are the Barbera, the Chardonnay, and the Pinot.
And I taste
a lot of wine over the year. And my co-mate over here generally tastes them with me as well, so that we have an intelligent conversation. And so I chose to, I have a philosophy that wine really, you can get more quality out of wine when you are tasting it with something that you think pairs well with it. And so for my tasting before the show, I did three things. So the Barbera, which was my very favorite,
yes,
because you do not necessarily find a good Barbera. It's it's kind of like Pinot. It's either going to be good or it's going to be really bad. It's just like there's no thing. And for my taste palate, it was round, smooth. It's like a deluxe wine, you know, better, bestest of all, you know, so we're sort of bestest of all. And I paired that with a steak, and that went big time good with our guests. Everybody loved it. There wasn't a amongst the group. So it was perfect. It was wonderful. These wines can be paired with food, but they can also be paired, just have it alone. Have yourself a moment with these wines. Each and every one of them was special. The Barbera was my favorite, but I'm sort of in an advanced journey on my wine journey. So I'm getting here where I'm getting really picky about what I like and don't like. I love that. Really like the Pinot. Now, Pinot is another one of those darn wines that if the winemaker is not paying attention, doesn't either blend the grapes together correctly or picked at the wrong time or whatever it is, it can be a stinker. This was just perfect. It was just perfect. And I paired it with corned beef and cabbage. Now, I know most of you would say, why would you, that doesn't Pinot go with salmon? Well, it does in the summer, certainly. But I did some research, and this particular wine has enough body, soul, taste profile that it just matched perfectly with it. And it was, everybody was really surprised that I would have done that, but I'm glad I did, because it held a dome. So it's a Pinot with punch. I really, really liked it. I should say the Barbera is about $45, I think. No, $64. And I think the Pinot is about $40. And then the last wine was Chardonnay. Now, this was a surprise, because I do not like Chardonnay. Sorry. I like this Chardonnay. This was round and buttery, but not too buttery. It had a hint of oak. Mm-hmm. Congratulations. Not so much oak that you were going, whoa, what happened here? Oh, my goodness. This was really, really creamy. And somebody had told me that this wine, before I drank it, was going to have a creamy texture to it. I thought, well, okay, so I will take this and I will do shrimp fettuccine. Ah! So another wine can stand just fine by itself. Probably this wine, the Chardonnay, is especially good for a wine aficionado. There's a lot to taste in it. There's just a real good journey with this wine. You can taste it by itself. You can taste it with food. Mine was just absolutely wonderful. And I think you correct me, Chris, if I'm wrong, it's about $24, I think, in that $20 range.
Everyone can go to the website, honestly, and just get it there, right? So
Yeah,
if
as
everyone
well.
goes,
Well, I just want
yeah.
people to understand the price range here, the
Yeah.
and how each wine differs in price, and we might talk to Chris a little bit about why that is. I have a good notion of that, but we'll see. So anyway, that's my review of the wines, and especially like to tell you to take a moment alone with each wine, and then with a favorite food that it will pair with. If you don't know how to pair wines with food, then you can just research it via the web, any website, you
And
know.
look at Diva Linda's article. Diva Linda's article is up on the show notes. So look at that. And then also the website for Danson, which is danson.com, Dancin. So, Chris, Diva Linda's off and running with your wine. Apparently, she's
Yeah.
cooking up a party. We all missed the party, but I want to go with that. Welcome. And I want to start with a Chardonnay because a Chardonnay in Nancy and I are, I mean, really kind of picky about white wines. It is true. And I think America was a little later on white wines than red. And I grew up in South Africa where the white wines were, I'm sorry, like right up there as the best. White wines in South Africa, New Zealand, and Australia are pretty prominent. And so we're weird about it. Like Linda, like Chardonnay and stuff, you go, oh God, are they going to over acidify this? And please don't give us heartburn, kind of feeling. But this was balanced and beautiful, man.
Chardonnays are, I always think of them as like the winemaker's wine, because the grapes and the juice is pretty neutral, so you have an opportunity in the winery. So a lot of like your the complete outcome of the Chardonnay is going to be based on your pick timing, your barrel selection. Are you like, we barrel ferment all of our Chardonnays. So this is one of probably seven Chardonnays that we make, and we'll do barrel fermenting on most of them. We do one in a concrete egg. And then really it comes down to, we really try to achieve, and this is like so cliche, but that sense of place where it's like, okay, these grapes come from, this vineyard. Or we do a lot of single clone blends. So a clone is kind of like just a representation of a Chardonnay. So like the Capriccio, this is the 22 Capriccio. This is 58% Wenti 72, 42% Dijon 76. And so we're big into clones, and we put it on the label because we want people to know what they're drinking, and ha you know, and what it is that people like. Wenti is going to be a little bit more on the tropical side, I would say. And so we try to pick that a little bit earlier, so we don't get pineapple and we don't get banana. I try to catch our Chardonnays. I always think of it as like the flavor spectrum going like apple, pear, lemon, nectarine, peach, pineapple. And I try to catch them right around lemon. And that way, if they bleed into peach or nectarine, I like those flavors, so I'm okay with it. But I always try to retain a lot of acidity, because if we're going to be barrel fermenting and you're creating this like richness and more texture and body, you want to have that that counterpoint of acid. And I feel like that is the driving force with all of our wines, is finding the two things, the large two things in each wine that you want pulling at each other. And that's the word that I always use, is tension. You want there to be some sort of tension, whether it's, for the reds, it's most of the time it's acid and tannin. And so with the Chardonnays, you want, you're trying to create that balance with like the creaminess from the barrel, but you want the acid to be there, to be present, but you want the fruit to be at the forefront. And so you're just trying to blend and put everything together in a manner that's going to produce a unique wine. One thing that we always do here, is that we always talk about anyway, is intention. So when we're picking grapes, we have, so like I was telling you before we started, on your background, there's some vines over your right shoulder. That's where the fruit for this wine always comes from. So we know where it's coming from, and we have a history of what it's done in the past. And so we can kind of, know what we want from it, And that helps inform our picking decisions and how we process it and that sort of thing.
What
So are
elevation?
you?
I'm
Go
sorry,
ahead.
what
Sorry.
elevation is this?
We sit, I think on our property, the low end is like 1750 and the high end is 1900.
Right. Yeah, with you talking about, the taste of place, basically, right? And having that sense of where you are, how far do you go in regards to with the Chardonnay being, here's the vineyard, these are these rows, and this is what makes a Chardonnay. Are you going like by microclimate versus Medford, which is where you are in the Rogue
I
Valley?
would say yes, because so we have a unique site in the Rogue Valley. So the Rogue Valley is we grow 70 different varietals in the Rogue Valley. 6,000 planted
Amazing.
acres. We have about 20 planted on our site. And like I said, let's say we're around 1800 feet elevation. And we're north facing. And so on your background, you'll see there's a hill behind you. And that is the sun sets kind of over that direction. So we get shade a little bit earlier. And I feel like that's what allows us to grow Pinot Noir and Chardonnay in a warm. So the Rogue Valley, I would consider a warm climate, but we have a little microclimate where we are in a great position to grow a little bit of this cooler climate varietals to an extent that is, exceptional.
How did you guys do during this winter storms that just happened? I was in Oregon during those storms, and I don't even want to talk about some of that, but it was crazy. But at the same time, I also drove through the northern part of the state. And Linda, where we were in the Columbia River Gorge area. And I saw vineyards and I'm like, oh my God, please don't know. So just so people know, because I know it hit national news, your area is a little warmer. We were in Eugene and then in like the northwest corner too, northeast corner, sorry, as well. And I just wondered what do you guys feel about this last winter that just happened? And moving forward, how's the vineyards?
The vineyard is fine. I would say the winters are typically the least of our worries because
Okay.
the vines are typically dormant. So the cold temperatures are not going to bother them. The hard part is spring. This is kind of the time of year that commands the most attention in the vineyard because, we're going to start, like if it warms up, we're going to start budding out. But if we catch a frost, that's going to kill all of our buds, and then you lose out. So we've been, just really keeping an eye on the weather for the springtime, which is, like I said, the most important. The summertime is just going to, these things are going to they just grow and grow and grow. It's incredible to see them grow.
What's harvest
But
time for Chardonnay?
for us, it's typically the first through the third week of September.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. It's almost similar to California in a way, right? Diva Linda in a way, depending on
Well, in some
where.
parts, just depends on where it
Yeah.
is.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So,
so everything's a little bit earlier for our particular site. I know some people, well, and for the varietals we grow as well. So they're just kind of, they just ripen a little bit earlier. So like I said, we're in West Medford. We're on a north facing slope. We're higher elevation across the valley. In East Medford, you have southern facing slopes that get just a ton of heat. And they're the ones that are growing, the Bordeaux varietals. They're growing the things that want the heat, that want all this like warm weather.
I want to go back to your Chardonnay and Diva Linda, you were talking about pairings, and we got to taste the wine today. And I'm still tasting it, and I'll be tasting it for the rest of the day. Good luck to anybody doing more podcasts with us today. But anyway, it's wonderful wine. We're having a good time. But I had it with lunch. I had the Chardonnay and paired it with a Asian slaw, kind of. So it had that spice and a little hint of sweet. And I have to say, it went really, really well. And I'm wondering now, starting to think about cabbage being a really good, like ingredient when it comes to wine, because it's kind of like a balancer and it can go sweet and spicy depending on the cabbage. Have you noticed that, Diva Linda, with cabbage and Chardonnay and cab I don't know, it just has this little I know you'd normally do salmon and all those wonderful things, but I had salad and it was good.
Oh, it'd be good with any kind of salad. I really just to bring out the flavors. If you had a walnut raisin salad or cranberry salad,
Oh,
I bet it's
see, it's that
amazing.
little sweetness. Yeah, there was sweetness in what we had in the dressing, a little bit of honey and peanut, and then the spiciness of the cabbage, like chink, like you had that little pep to it.
I think
So,
for me, you need to explore, right? So you probably it depends on if you're a foodie, not a foodie. What are you, a vegetarian? Are you a pescatarian? What are you? Who are you? What do you like? What would you say is something that you would like to see paired with your Chardonnay?
I usually rely on when so I'll get a menu from the chef and they'll say, what do you want to pair with this? And so when I just read the ingredients, and I will typically look at do I want to pair it congruently, or do I want to pair it kind of opposite? Do I want it to combat it a little bit to kind of create this distinction, or do I want it to kind of all flow together? And the Chardonnays, typically, I would say are I'll usually do them in this in a similar vein, so that they will, because they're a little bit on the more acidic side. So I would usually do them with, the salads, the dressings are going to be a little bit more like vinaigrette-y and that sort of thing. And then seafood is always a wonderful option, because seafood and anything. Any acidic wine is phenomenal. And then you start getting into seafood that can handle, a sauce, so like a scallop is just that would be my go-to is a scallop with like a little bit of like a maybe
Oh,
a like
yeah.
a cream sauce. And then you have so then you have so you have a little bit more of like texture and a little fullness from the cream sauce, and then you have the acid of the wine to just kind of cut right through it.
Yeah. But then there's also a subtlety with your Chardonnay that I think is really nice. There's something, you've got an incredible balance in all three wines we tasted. There's this balance of acid and mineral just coming together, saying, let's be friends. We can create a bridge. We can drink together and have fun. It's like we need more of this in the world. And with the Chardonnay, I know I'm doing more of like an Asian slaw, but I would think like a more of a velvety texture of leaf, like a spinach or even like a butter lettuce, that kind of thing would go. It would be beautiful with it. I liked what I had today, and that's what I had on hand. But like honestly, and I don't eat seafood, I'm allergic to it, so can't do that. But I could say chicken, a nice, roast chicken breast, like just nice and subtle, creamy. Yeah. Ooh. Okay. Now I'm hungry. Now can we have lunch again with more wine? Sounds good. Sounds good. But let's move over to the Pinot Noir, which is interesting because that's the first thing everyone thinks, especially in Willamette Valley, right? Willamette Valley Pinot. And then you go, okay, the war on Pinot. How do you move ahead and get your wine positioned? How do you get Pinot right there? Like when you have so many people in the state of Oregon with Pinot, but you guys are also doing Pinot Noir. So is that important for people to know for Rogue Valley that you're doing it as well? Or is that a norm?
I think it helps, definitely. I mean, Pinot Noir is the most planted grape in Southern Oregon as well.
Okay.
So we do a lot of Pinot Noir down here. People will make wine from it. They will sell it to, people in the Willamette Valley or California or wherever it may be. Depending on their site, they have the ability to get, richer, darker fruits than, maybe someone in the Willamette Valley. So maybe they want to supplement with, riper fruit or something along those lines. For our wines, this particular one, and just like the Chardonnay, we make 7 to 12 Pinot Noirs on a given vintage, and they're usually based in either a clonal blend or they are specific to a particular part of the vineyard. And so we go, like I said, we go into everything with intention. And so, like this wine, I know where the grapes come from, so I know what I want. And so I monitor that location. And then when I think it's ready, we pick it. And then it from basically step one, I'm like, okay, this is going to be this vintage of Adagio. And then that's what it becomes. And so this is a single clone blend of Veytonville 2A, which I don't think is a super common clone. I want to say in the Willamette Valley, they do a lot of Veytonville 1A. So this is a little bit different, but it's so unique. And that's what makes it
You
really
know,
special to us.
you don't see clones out there in the verbiage very often of wine. Linda, have you seen it that often? I mean, I think this is one of the few times you've even written about the clone part of it.
I like, once I understood what a clone was, and somebody related it to me as to my gardening. So when you, if you're really into roses, you want a special type of rose, also in parents, that the clone matches the terroir and matches the winemaker's vision of what that wine should taste like. And I've seen whole vineyards pulled out when a new winemaker comes in, or chopped back, or whatever, if that's not the vision of the winemaker. So this particular wine, when did you pick this mid-season, or so on your scale, you're on your fruit scale, at what point did you pick this? When it came to cherry, or what, at what point?
I would say that so these we usually try to go a little bit riper just because I know that this clone is going to have the acid to kind of stand up to it. So this usually, yeah, will come in. Pinot has an interesting flavor profile in the juice when you're sampling. And we usually shoot for like when the juice starts tasting like candy, like Jolly Ranchers. Then I know that we're moving in the right direction. And usually I will try to go like a step or two beyond that to where it's starting to taste like fresh fruit, like fresh strawberries. And then it can darken up a little bit. This Adagio, though, this is very unique in a way because I always get like a lot of cranberry from it, even though it's very ripe. It's a ripe wine. But it carries like a tea note.
Hold your glass up so everybody can see the color of this wine. So that's
Beautiful.
a pretty colorful Pinot. Sometimes they're so light you go, oh, is this going to be cherry water, or what is it going to be? So you can see how beautiful that just by vision. So you get, if I'm on a, if I'm
That's
on
what I
a
was going to
score,
say.
oh, go
Yeah,
ahead.
but
You go ahead.
I was going to say that's the color goes with the name Danson Vineyards. The color. That was part of what I was saying at the beginning of the show is like, and then you taste it, and it goes with the actual name of the vineyard. The wine does that, and I think the color goes with that, Diva Linda, with what you were saying. I wasn't trying to interrupt, but I did. I'm having wine, sorry.
How did you come to name this wine? So by the, so it has a third name.
That's
So like a
music.
2021 Pinot, and then you call it Adagio or anything like that.
Tribute.
Yeah, so the Adagio was is I guess the term Adagio represents the first movements in ballet that lead to others. And this was the first Pinot Noir that Danson as a brand produced. And so that's kind of the idea. And then it's also a little nod to Peter Britt, who planted the first person to plant vineyards in Southern Oregon back in the, I think, late 1800s.
Oh,
And
wow.
he was from Switzerland. And so this is like a Swiss clone of Pinot Noir, the Veytonville
Why did Danson
2A.
Vineyards? Tell us, because I know you're a dancer. You like dance, right, too? So you like music. So
I
the
love
dancing
music.
part, yeah, the dancing part of it, I mean, to me, that's the beauty of wine is as you take another sip and another sip, it starts to show itself. in color, as you watch it and you swirl it around and you go, do you have legs? Apparently we're not allowed to say legs anymore. I don't know, get a pronoun for that too. But I was just saying, you gotta have, the legs. I know we're not supposed to say that, but we're talking about dancing and wine that dances to me, even though, yes, we know it's fermented, right? It's got a life force. And that's what I feel about your wine, that it has this vibrancy, yet balance at the same time, which is very hard
That's
to
the
me to
acid.
get.
That's just acid.
Well,
Well, I
whatever
didn't
means
do
it
that
works.
today. No, I just think that for me, like the goal of these wines, like I said, especially the reds, is to have tension. Tension is the word that I want.
Okay,
So
that's a good
this
word.
has a higher acid, and so it requires a little bit more tannins just to kind of create this kind of effect that in your mouth, you can feel it. There's tension in your mouth with the flavor profile.
So the Barbera, let's talk about that. And this one we have is the tribute. And tell us why the tribute. Is it like a tribute to the region? Because it's a tribute Rogue Valley.
It is a tribute to the founder's Italian heritage
Okay.
and the idea of hospitality and making people feel at home and feel comfortable in a space that, sometimes maybe not is not super comfortable for people. And that's, going to wineries and, oh, I don't know the words and I don't know how to describe this. And it's like, well, that's not really important. I always tell people, if they say like, well, I don't really know wine, I'm not really good with wine. And I'm just like, it's simple. You taste it. Do you like it? Can you? And then the next step is just to figure out why. Why do you like it? And then you can go from there. Then you can branch off and, try to learn all the words and, all the flavors and all that. But start with, do you like it? Do you not like it? And try to figure out why.
And don't say legs.
Don't say legs, no.
I have a short little story that sort of illustrates this point of naming stuff. So when I was a director of a wine region, part of what I did was help write copy for promotions. And so I used to have to sit with the winemakers. Let's say we were having a festival. And so we had to do winemaker notes for all the wines that were going to be in there. So if you had 13 wineries or 25 wineries and everybody was participating, that's a whole lot to agree on what the winemaker notes are or should be. So I remember when I first started with them, it sticks in my mind. We're sitting there and we're on a wine and we're going to write the notes. And the winemaker has in his head what those notes are. And the rest of the group, not so much. So, everybody's got a glass of whatever we're talking about, and they're sniffing, smelling, swirling. And it sort of went like this. Okay, what are the notes of this? It's just, how about if we just get what we smell? And somebody would say fig, and then somebody would say cherry, and some would say something else. And the winemaker would say, well, I'll only agree to fig. And then somebody would say, well, I don't agree to any of that. What I get in here is this, that, and the other thing. And trying to get even eight winemakers to agree on what taste they were getting, what aroma they were getting was difficult. So, to illustrate a point, everybody has a different palate. And they
And
also
winemakers
have,
are difficult people.
oh, well, I did it for like
And
70
chefs,
years. Oh,
winemakers and
chefs.
chefs. Yeah.
When you said menus, I have to laugh because that's another one of those. Well, I don't know. I'll let you say fig if you let me put in lemon. I'll let you.
I want to
So,
put in leather.
yes. Oh,
And
that's a
that's
good
not,
one.
and there's diesel,
Oh.
and things. I remember the first time sipping wine that I went, oh my God, this has like a thing of diesel gas kind of. And then I'm like, I can't say that. Then I found out, yes, you can.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's
You can
okay.
go as
Well,
far as cat pee.
can you really?
Well,
Wow.
Sauvignon Blancs, yeah. I think they prefer boxwood tree now, but
Okay, so what am I supposed to say for legs now that I'm not allowed
I
to say
don't think,
legs
well, I
anymore?
mean, you can say, I just don't think that it's just not an important characteristic.
Okay. I
So
just
I
like
think
smelling
that's
the
kind
wine
of
and letting it have its
yeah, and
movement.
you can kind of see, and it's just not, it's just something that's not really important. So when people do that, it's kind of like, oh, look at the legs on that. And it's like, eh, it's not really important. Because really what
Oh.
it comes down to is just like alcohol and viscosity and things like that. And maybe that could be important, but I feel like you get more of, you can determine that more by putting the wine in your mouth, you know?
I was going to say the taste to me is important. I love color. Color tells me a bunch just in general. I just you either you are attracted to specific colors as an individual. You know, just about like, oh, I want to plant this rose shade in my front yard. You know, it's the same thing with wine. I think we are attracted by color. You know, other people may not like red. I do. Some people go, no. You know, everybody's a little different, and that's the beauty of it. Wine is an art. Do you feel that way as a winemaker? And like, what led you to actually go in and do this? Because, I mean, as a little kid, did you go, I'm going to go make wine?
A little bit, yeah. My dad made wine when I
Oh,
was a kid. So it
cool.
was, so that was something that's kind of just was stuck in my brain. And then when I was in my early 20s, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And I had decided that I wanted to be a little more hands-on, a little more blue collar. You know, I wanted to work with my hands and feel like at the end of the day, when, you know, that feeling when you feel accomplished because you worked, you
Yeah.
know, physically. And so I wanted a skill, basically. I wanted more of a trade. And so I had toured a bunch of different schools. I had gone to like you know, like a helicopter pilot school. Is this something that I want to do? And then I ended up going to the Northwest Viticulture Center, which was, I believe, the f I'm not sure if I was the first year or the second graduating class at this center, but it's based out of Salem. It's
Oh, okay.
through Chemeketa Community College. But it ha they have their own, it's called the Northwest Viticulture Center, and they have their own vineyard, they have their own winery, they have some beautiful space to hold events. And we and I, so I when I walked into this place, there was like a little bit of a wave of nostalgia that washed over me of just like when I was a kid, and the smells that I smelled when I walked in reminded me of just, you know, being a kid and you know, just wine in general. So I decided to enroll, and one of the cool things about programs like these is they're cyclical. So you are, you know, the growing season is pretty cyclical. So you start your program and you start it with a group of people, and then you just end up taking classes with the same people throughout the entire, you know, grape growing process, wine processing, all that stuff. So there was a class of, you know, 20 some people. And we all just learned it all together. And then now we're all
Cool.
out in the world, and it's cool to see, you know, it's cool to see people that I went to school with having their own brands or being a winemaker at some, you know, fancy place or starting their own, you know, starting their own family vineyard or whatever. And it's just, it's fun to see.
That's awesome to hear, and to even think about, you know, the power of smell, right? Eventually we will have smell-o-vision. I don't know if we want it, but I mean, it was obviously not cat pee, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, what about the science part of it? Did you expect yourself to get into that world too? When we think about hands-on skill,
Yeah.
trade, getting your hands in the dirt, then next thing you know, here's the, you know, going into a winemaker's cavern, really is what I call it. It's like a crazy little lab with test tubes and stuff, and you're like, what are you really growing? Like, what's
Yeah.
going on in
Well,
there?
that's the beautiful part of it is it's an artistic field that is rooted in science. So there are things that are constants. You know, think of mathematics and science. These are constants. You know, the grapes, the sugars, the, you know, the bricks, the acid, these are things that are, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Measurable. These are all
Yeah.
measurable things.
Yeah.
And then when you get it into the winery, then we have an opportunity to make an impact on those numbers, you know, in a way that is not numbers based. It's not science based. So it's more artistic. It's that's why I love Chardonnay. Chardonnay is probably the most boring grape besides Pinot Gris That, and I have probably shots fired there, but Chardonnay is a boring grape, and it's a winemaker's grape because we get to bring it in, and we get to mold it into what we want it to be. And you start, at your pick decision. So like this Capriccio, we picked it early. I wanted it to be picked at 21 bricks so that it keeps a lot of that citrus characteristics. There was. Back in the 90s and back in the heyday of, big California Chardonnays, everyone wanted like big golden ripe clusters. And I want green clusters. I want this fruit coming in green. I don't want it to get a lot of sun. I don't want a lot of russeting or color. I want it to be green. I want it to be fresh. I want the acid to be sharp. And then I can determine, okay, does this want a little bit of new oak? Does this want a little bit of ML? Do I want to do this? The grapes that we put in the egg to create, a little bit more minerality, does this want stainless steel? And then you start, like I said, you have this intention of what you want things to be, and then they just kind of go along this scale, and you have to be really flexible with it. But you determine, okay, this is really great. I think I'm going to do maybe this gets one new barrel because it can handle it, and then you end up then you put together your blends, and it turned out.
We like the word blend.
Yeah.
Do you talk to the grapes throughout the process of like, hello, I'm coming to see you. How are you doing today? Will you do
No,
what I
it's more
need you to
like
do? You don't? No.
during harvest, it's like swearing.
Yeah, I was gonna say, or the
Come
words could go the other
on, you son
way.
of
Oh,
Why
wow.
are you
Okay.
go? Finish. What are
Okay.
you
Now what?
doing? Come
All right, so
on.
let's take this. I want to hear your music pick. If you're going to make a playlist of music that
Oh
goes
man,
with your wine.
I don't it's hard to make a playlist that goes with the wine, but every year I
Yeah.
make a harvest playlist.
Is there
What
like what's in
the?
there? Is there punk, heavy, like metal, death me or
It
death metal? I'm going to kill you.
I love all types of music. The only I don't really listen to a lot of country. That's really the only one that I don't really listen to. I would say generally speaking, there's going to be like indie rock, kind of alternative rock in there. I like to listen to, some of the bigger ones are just like Spoon or Manchester Orchestra,
All right.
Silver Sun Pickups, and then I'll throw in like some a little bit of house music from time to time. Some hip hop if I can get away with it, if the
I was just, for some reason, I just was like, now I'm stuck with the jump around. I'm like, it's stuck in my head now. I don't know why. I don't know why.
Hip
I don't
hop for some
know.
reason,
The
like at
dance.
the end of the day, like when you're about to clean, it's like you put it on and it just kind of invigorates you. You're just like, okay, I got it a little
I can
extra
get through
wind
this.
here.
I can get through this. I can do it. I can do it. Well, I love the labels. Linda, do you ever buy wine without tasting it by the label? I just want to know if you do that.
I used to do that, and I thought that's how you bought wine. For me, if it had a moon on it, I'd buy it. Moon, I like the moon. Seems to me that somebody was creative with the label, and that's how I bought my wine. So, but as you continue your wine journey, you begin to understand it's sort of like legs. Doesn't really,
Uh-oh.
yeah. So it's not really germane to what it is that you're looking for in the end. So no, not anymore. I used to though, and almost all my friends still do that. So sometimes when I have a wine tasting party and we're having new people, and I mean new as in first time learners, that's their discussion point is the label. Did they like the label? So, did the label entice them to drink the wine? And at first I thought, hey, yeah, that makes sense to me. And now I go, oh shoot, here's another discussion like legs,
But I like the labels. Look at the labels.
This
The
one is
dancing labels
beautiful.
are beautiful. I
They're
mean, this is,
beautiful,
are
beautiful.
they actual? I mean, is someone, do you have these as paintings? I mean, the
We have
labels
them
are
as prints in the
amazing.
tasting room. Yeah, this was high speed photography that was done. And
Oh,
like I said,
wow.
there's always intention behind. We try to have intention behind everything we do. So the Chardonnay label is the
Yeah.
wine dress is the color of the wine.
See?
So we started with the Pinot, and the idea was the dress is the color of the wine, but it also
Yes, that's beautiful.
she's also doing a movement that is in the shape of a wine glass.
And she's splashing. She's got
And
wine
she's
splash.
splashing. Yeah, so
We
there's
want splash.
a wine dress. So each wine is going to have their own
So
iteration.
if you have not listened to this podcast, but obviously you are if you're listening, you can buy this wine by the label and you will not be disappointed. Just saying for
Yeah,
the people
we
in.
want the label to be something that enhances it, that can maybe draw you in, but then also especially on the back label, give you enough information about the product and where we are and what we're doing. I feel like if people don't give a lot of information on their label, as someone who's in the wine industry, I want that information because it's going to help me make an informed decision on, are they, what are they doing with this wine?
They're
And
cloning.
so, yeah, to see clones on there, I think is for me is really
It's
cool because that's
unique.
something that I'm into. So if I see that on a place, it's like, oh, this matters to them, which means that they, details matter to them.
Well, you, Linda, writing about it, I went, I gotta go look up clones. I've never thought about clones. And of course, I know about clones, but like, I never, like, so then I had to get into cloning. And you're right, it's like gardening and grafting and all of that good stuff, right? I want to say definitely you can buy it by the label. I love that part of it. But people can purchase the wine online. Where else can they purchase it? And tell us a little bit about the winery experience for visitors coming to your area.
So we do most of our sales through the tasting room. We are, I would say, 95% direct to consumer.
Holy cow, that's
But
amazing. Case
we
production.
do a
I'm
We're
sorry.
around 3,500 cases, I would say.
Okay.
We bounce between 32 and 42, I would say, depending on the year.
Depending on how much the winemaker wants to drink.
Depending on,
Just kidding.
so the Barbera, so this kind of goes back to the Rogue Valley as a unique growing region. So we are growing Pinot Noir and Chardonnay, cooler climate site. 15, literally 15 minutes away, the Celestina Vineyard is south facing, and they're growing Barbera, Sangiovese, Zinfandel, Malbec. And we
Wow.
buy Barbera, Sangiovese, and Zinfandel from them. And 2024 is going to be our 10-year anniversary working with them. And so
Wow.
it's just kind of really cool that you have this space where. As the valley anyway, where we're doing Pinot Chard, they're doing Zinfandel and big reds and these kind of longer, warmer, desiring varietals.
That's amazing. And I love that you're all working together too. That's also a huge deal.
Well,
I
I was
think,
just going to mention
yeah.
that. So, in my experience, when a winemaker finds a vineyard that they think has that's not their own, but they see as a potential partner, the first year you buy the grapes as is, meaning how the grower is growing them. That's, it doesn't have anything to do with you, but you lie as a winemaker liked how the product. But are you able to? I used to see this. The longer the relationship, the more the grower is likely to change their viticulture practices a bit to suit what you need as your end product. Are you able to do that? Work with the.
I would say so, yes. They I so we worked with them since 2014. I came on at Danson in 2018. So and I tried to do that straight away, like, oh, what about this? And what about this? And it just got to the like we just it was almost like we just kind of came together and like, okay, this is what we're looking for. Like it was kind of like it took a year. Come to an understanding of what we're all looking for. And I was a little brash probably in my early years. And now I'm thinking, you know what? This guy's been growing these grapes for, we worked with him in 2014, but he's been growing them since before that. Like he knows his site. So let's give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, but also be able to say what we're looking for. This is what we want. If we're making three different Barberas, but they all come from the same vineyard, how can we differentiate them? Okay, so we've got multiple blocks, we've got, different pick times, we've got, all this stuff that we have to coordinate with
Wow.
them that, he understands. And so, that's kind of how we deal with our relationship. And it's a little more, it's more symbiotic now than it's ever been, because he understands what we want, and he understands his vineyard enough to say, like, okay, well, why don't we pick this first? Then we can pick this, then we can do that. And then, a lot of it stupidly comes down to schedules too. It's like, well, that doesn't fit in my schedule.
Well,
We're picking
that's
a bunch that
right,
day.
yeah.
We can't do it, but
Huh.
yeah.
Very cool. Well, this is amazing. I'm excited about this, and I'm glad that you have good labels that match your wine and your wine, that's all connected. It's important, Linda. It is. I know she's like, no, it is. But it is. Don't you love the labels? I have to tell you, we went to a dinner and I picked two wines out. On our way into a dinner, we were going, as we pet sit across the country. And I went and I saw, I didn't know anything about these wines, didn't play app or anything, but I read where they were from and knew from the description, like you're saying, and from where they were that these were going to be good wines. And I took them to our host at for their dinner, which was, it was just a chilled out, relaxed, nothing fancy. And I said, well, I got it because of the label and including the description, but the labels were cool. It was all earth and nature and stuff, I like all that stuff. And she had the audacity to look it up on her phone and see if the wines were good enough. But check this out. She had wine left over that she had purchased. I thought that was kind of not polite, but anyway, we won. Apparently, I was like, okay, well then take that. Look it up again, So both our wines won, and there you go. Yeah, from
Perfect.
labels, and
Yeah.
they were a 4 point something, 4.4 or something wine. I don't know on whatever app. I don't know. Do
Oh,
you
so
use
she was kind
apps?
of like, she was doing like checking the different ratings or whatever.
Yeah, she just went and checked it out. Well, let me go look up your wine, and I thought, but checking up to see what the price was and what the point, I don't know. Do you guys do that kind of thing? Do you ever use apps to check wine out or just,
I
go to
haven't, because
the winery?
I'm not so much in the consumer space as much, because
Yeah.
I've been lucky enough to deal with a lot of people kind of mentoring me over the years. So I have a lot of friends in the valley who are experienced winemakers, and we just we'll trade wines, or I'm friends with like distributors, and
He's got a good career here. I'm just saying, Diva Linda. I think we do too, because we get to taste it. But I think the app thing, in a way, is kind of ruining the experience. I'm not trying to be weird about it, but I kind of feel there's an element of surprise and sometimes just not knowing anything and tasting it and just going on the journey of it. And I think the best is to actually go to the winery if possible. That's kind of
Yeah.
the thing,
Well, and
you
that
know?
be really kind of tricky too, because let's say that look it up. Get very poor ratings, then you kind of are feeling like, well, do I even know what I'm doing, as a consumer?
Yeah. Well, it's a journey. Everyone just go have
Yeah.
fun, drink wine, taste it, see what you like, write notes. Do you write a bunch of notes even if you go to like a dinner party and someone, do people get nervous about pouring you wine? Rather like if you're.
Sometimes, but not usually. Like I said, a lot of the people that I know are, adjacent to the wine industry, or, my wife used, I would bring wines home and be like, hey, help me do tasting notes on these. And she would get all nervous. And now she's just like,
Bring it.
just fires them at me. And I'm like, hey, just write it down. Let me just put this into Word real quick.
It's
And
their truth. And that's what I always tell people. Your truth doesn't have to be my truth, right? So if I smell figs and lemon, that's the aroma that I'm getting. But maybe
Oh,
you're
yeah.
getting
I like figs.
apple and something else. And that's okay. Did you, in the end, did you like the wine? And in the end, Would you go and seek out this wine and purchase it?
Yes, I would. And well, everyone, this is Danson. Go to danson.com and Diva Linda's article about the wines, her reviews, and also tasting notes and pairings are all linked in the show notes. I want to thank you both for being on the show. This is always exciting. You definitely have good taste. Allingoodtaste.info is Linda's website. Go figure, right? But
Good
thank you,
job.
Diva Linda. Thank you so much, Chris, joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio with travel writer Linda Kazam. Keep up with Linda at allingoodtaste.info. You can read her articles in Big Blend magazines and keep up with us at bigblendradio.com.